whatever you have a chance.
Okay.
Just do roll call at 344.
Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popio?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Ms. Gallen? Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Rubin is recused. Ms. Asta, are you with us? Ms. Asta, are you with us?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay. And we have quorum.
Okay. We have quorum and it's 3:45. We're back into main session. So, closure for today was a suggestion. One would be formal interview, and the other would be a consent agreement, and then specify what we want in the consent agreement. So I need the board's feedback on that.
Can we also make sure that Dr. Porter and his attorney have all the exhibits and information that we have had?
Yes, I will. Appreciate it. Thank you. Ms. Asa, is that a problem, or would he be able to get that?
I think that's fine, but I will double check after the meeting.
So, we got the choices we really have today. Well, we can come up with lots of choices, but where we're at, in my opinion, is either formal interview, and then, or a consent agreement, and then we state what we need in the consent agreement. So I'll need some feedback from everybody.
This is Dr. Bopio. I guess I'm not feeling like I'm ready to make a decision on the consent agreement or hammer that out as of yet. I think we still need some additional information, and given the potential level of severity that this may fall under, I believe more either continuing it to the next meeting or the formal interview process would be the appropriate step.
Okay. Dr. Popio, do you have any real quick verbiage that you'd want to give the board staff to look at to possibly bring back to the next meeting or the month after that?
As far as like why we would be postponing?
As to what we can help them bring back for us to help clarify. So what Ms.
I feel like we need to, I guess we can do it today, we can postpone it, but I feel like we need Dr. Kiefer to continue walking us through the data a little bit more potentially, given that it does fairly strong proof of where things stand. I just, given the level at which that falls under, I feel like I would want to be really certain, and I would want the Dr. Porter and his counsel to have the paperwork if that is appropriate for Ms. Asta. I would like everybody to have all the data involved so that this can be clean and, not have any issues moving forward that we've missed. So I don't feel like Dr. Porter presents any sort of imminent threat to the public. So to me, I don't feel like we're in a position where we need a suspension of his license or his prescriptive capacity yet. I feel like either continuation or transitioning to the formal interview makes the most sense.
This is Rena Rye. I just wanted to say that, given the number of hours that we've spent putting this together, and Dr. Kiefer has had to work with me on, we are prepared to go through it. I don't think it will be very long, but we would prefer to do that today rather than to have to prepare again next month for, a continuation if we have any say in the matter.
If I could be heard on that, this is Mr. McDonald. Having not seen what they put together, it would put us at a great disadvantage to let them put this on today without knowing what they put in their package. I mean, we've just heard, for example, the first time that apparently Dr. Kiefer claims that Mrs. Porter was not a patient for the last 3 years and that she's never had any staff people contact her about getting permission. So perhaps those documents support that, but I think if to be meaningful, we would like the opportunity, if there was a continuance, to grant the continuance. Let us review what they have now brought to the board today, which was never provided to us. And we think we would then be in a better position when this is continued to, for the court, to, for the board to see our response to these claims.
And again, Rena Rye, I'm not suggesting that they don't have an opportunity to respond. I'm just saying, let us walk you through what we've put together. You can get it. And then I assume there'll be a conversation, whether it's that formal interview or a continuation. And Dr. Porter can have ample time to respond to those. All I'm suggesting is that, you know, our efforts not be wasted in preparing today. I'm not suggesting that that does not, that negates their ability to, you know, meaningfully respond.
Okay. I understand, Ms. Ray, what you're saying, and Mr. McDonald. Due to the complexity and then obviously probabilities with Dr. Porter's license, Dr. Papil did make the gesture and suggestion for a formal interview. So that was one motion. I'll second that and hopefully we can draw closure to it. So that's two, that's the second, and now at this phase I'll need either further discussion from board members or we'll need to do a roll call. No more discussion from board members.
This is Dr. Popiel. I guess I would, given that, you know, Dr. Kiefer and counsel suggest that they can, you know, they would simply walk us through the paperwork and that absolutely Dr. Porter and his counsel will have the opportunity to respond. I guess I'm in favor of hearing what they have to say and then getting Dr. Porter and his counsel the paperwork and then they can respond at the next meeting. That would be my thought, but I'm open for discussion.
So you're still staying with the original motion for formal interview?
Yes, because I feel like Dr. Porter is going to have to respond to what appeared to be damning is the wrong word, but damning evidence that, you know, that Dr. Kiefer is correct in what she's saying. So I feel like Dr. Porter and his counsel will need an opportunity to respond, but that obviously can't happen today. I respect that Dr. Kiefer and counsel are prepared for today, so I'm willing to hear that discussion.
Okay. And then just ask that you'll look into whether this will pose a problem for either person.
I'm trusting it's not a problem, but I just want to confirm about writing the documents. Again, this is not a hearing, so
right.
If you wanted to hear what the any party here has to say, that's fine.
Okay. So we got a motion, we got a second. Do we need further discussion, or should we have Ms. Anthony go ahead and do a roll call?
Are we going to hear from Dr. Kiefer and her attorney before, or can we do that after the roll call vote?
If you'd like to hear from Dr. Kiefer and Ms. Wright, her attorney, that's fine before we do the vote. I thought we wrapped that, but go ahead and ask her what you'd like.
No, she was just going to walk through some items. I wasn't sure if we were still doing that today or if that was being
I think we were going to save because I think Mr. McDonald wants the ability to look at the information that he doesn't have.
I would have no objection for them walking it through it today. So so that they can complete what they presented and then give us the materials and reschedule us for a future meeting. And that would give us a chance to hear what she's prepared today. And we can take that into account in preparing for the our response at a future meeting.
Ms. Rye, are you willing to do that for a few minutes, or would you
I mean, again, we're not trying to be tricky here, so if I would have thought that Mr. McDonald would want us to walk through this and explain why we think they're important or why they suggest what they suggest, and they can take their best shot at responding to that whenever the board sees fit.
Board members, are you in concurrence?
Sounds good to me, Dr. Bofio.
Okay. 4 o'clock. Can you give us about a 5 or 10 minute max?
Yeah, well, I think we can try and get this done in 10 minutes for you.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. I'm going to start with Exhibit 1. And the first 3 pages are taken from the response to DEA agent Eric Andrews. He was assigned to the case and handled it throughout. So on this list, this is me responding because I had to do all the research for him. But I went through and let him know the days I was in office, the days I was not in office, the ones I realized definitely did not write or did write. And so you have a list here, and some of the prescriptions that were written are on Saturday or Sunday. So clearly nobody's in the office on that day. But this is great to have right up front because you can always reference back to it on the day that something was written. Was I even in office that day? Going on to the next part, pages 4 through 10, you'll see the PMP report, which is for JP-74, and it's exactly what I pulled up on 1-6-2020 when I after I called the pharmacy. And there's 101 prescriptions in the time frame from 4 of 2012 until 1-6-2020. 98 of them are under my name. Okay, on to page 9 of the exhibit, which is still part of the PMQ report, you'll see that prior to my involvement at all, Dr. Porter was writing these prescriptions just under his own name. So it was almost a continuance. It just took over under my DEA license. Pages 11 through 17 are taken from Practice Fusion. It's the list of medications directly from, on my computer, it shows the highlights are blocked out. Are you able to see what's under the highlights?
Yes.
Okay, good. So this is directly from Practice Fusion from JP's chart, and it lists all of the medications over the course of time and who prescribed them. So if you just scroll through, you can see that Dr. Porter prescribed probably 98% of them himself, and there are pages of them. And so you can look at those on your own time, but right after that exhibit on page 11, on page 11, the first one is highlighted, goes along with the page I took from MyRx and shows that in Practice Fusion, it shows up as he prescribed it. On the MyRx, it shows up as I prescribed it. Right after that, I tried to correlate the inner office messages with the MyRx, which is from the PMP, and shows that it's under my name. So this first one, 9-22-16, and when you're reading these, you have to start at the bottom and go up because the whole list is at the bottom. So here, it literally looks like it was exactly printed from Practice Fusion, as though he printed it out and handed it to someone and said it was like copied and pasted or something. And it says, refill this for JP under Dr. Keeper. And then just the response, okay, it's called in. And then when you look at my RF on page 20, you'll see that it was under my DEA as he instructed them to do. Um, page 25. You see that he attempted to have a script called in under his name, although the pharmacist called him out on it, and his response was to put it under my name. I was not in the office that day, and you can reference page 2 of this exhibit to see that. The message to Dr. Porter was sent at 11:37 a.m., and he returned it at 12:13, a total of 36 minutes. So the chance that he saw it the minute it came through, that I wasn't with a patient in another office, that a correspondence occurred, and he checked in with me before doing it and replying that way is highly unlikely. And I do want to remind you that in 2004, Dr. Porter had disciplinary action by the board related to prescribing. Okay, page 29 is an in-office message where I received the fact from Dr. Porter, Rena Rye mentioned this earlier. I received a fax for a refill, which I didn't recognize, as, you know, I got in touch with Dr. Porter, and I said, hey, is Julie needing something? Because it came across my desk, or did he? And he said, nope, she said 5 days earlier she had already refilled it under my name, and there was no disclosure. Page 32, it appears that JP74 is ordering her own script via text to her sister. I want to let you know that the office has had, over the course of time, two sister-in-law serve as managers. His own sister served as in a managerial type of role. He has 4 children working there, and I believe a cousin. So the office has a large portion of his family in the office. What's alarming to me, and I promise that once I get through these first two exhibits, it goes really quickly. What's alarming to me is that on 4/4/14, alprazolam extended release 1 milligram of quantity of 6B was prescribed, and on 4/10, she also filled alprazolam 1 milligram quantity of 90. And then in addition, Soma was filled 5 days later, and oxycodone 3 days after that. So there's a big concern, it's not about my concern. Okay. Concern about the amount and the mixing. You can review the rest of those documents. I tried to do the inner office method and correlate it with the prescription showing up on my DEA record. Okay, I'm ready to go on to 2A unless anyone wants to stop me. Okay. So 2A. This is in response to the documents that Dr. Porter and his counsel provided to the board. And all of these are just about how those documents are misrepresentation, possibly altered, forged, and incomplete. So 2A, on page 1 to 2 are true notes that I wrote. And if you notice in the top right corner, it says signed, and it has a date that I signed them. Following the two chart notes that I wrote are two, I'll call them forged or altered or created, that were not mine. And you'll notice in the top corner that they are not signed by me or anyone, which means that you could go in and create them. In addition, at the end of 2A, I believe, that we put in the transcription where he called me on 10/28/20 to tell me, because he did not know about the indictments yet or the process that was happening, he called to tell me that he created chart notes under my name because he had chart subpoenaed by the board. So, also, you'll notice that page 2, in association with page 6, are the same date. So he created a chart note for a day that was already existing. Page 7 to 10 are the transcribed phone calls. I just want to point out page 8. No, I'm sorry. Page 8, line 19 to 25. This is what he said and has been transcribed. Just FYI, meaning because you had prescribed safety, like Benjamin, it wasn't really a good, there was no real chart note on it. I wrote a chart note for it. So, you know, meaning just, you know, just what, you know, prescribed. Because it was in the prescription, but it wasn't like, you know, is like, here, this is what we did. So that's for you to review. I'm ready to go on to, Exhibit 2B. I was locked out of practice fusion on the day of that transcribed phone call. And when I was allowed back into practice fusion several days later, I went in and grabbed the audit chart for JP's chart. And that's the entire Exhibit 2B is. It's the audit chart. So you can see that it was accessed in the time that the chart note was created under my name, a total of 558 times between him and his sister-in-law, who is the office manager, suggesting that there was a lot of manipulation going on in the chart, and that was 4 days. So 4 days, 558 times. Exhibit 2C. This is to show that the multitude of documents that you received are incomplete and are just misleading. Because throughout the documents, there are claims that patient X was prescribed a controlled substance out of EVMD, and there is no documentation. Well, the reality is that you needed one DEA number for all of your offices, and the primary location that it was listed under is what shows up on a PMP report. So there were six other offices during this time period that I practiced within, and I've chosen several of them to include here to prove that I did have the chart notes. They just weren't in his possession, but he's making the assumption that they should have been in East Valley's chart or EHR. And these are all correlated with the claims that were given to you by Dr. Porter. I'm going to go ahead and go on to 2D. Here, again, exhibits that were given to you, the board, by Dr. Porter and counsel. So the first three pages, and it says exhibit in the bottom right-hand corner, so you know that they were given to you by Dr. Porter. So the claim on page 27 of the document he submitted to you about this case on page 58 is that on 1-3-2020, document that is at the exhibit 519. No charge exists. Exhibit 520, a stay sheet, the only completed documentation present. The exhibit 521. The example represents the typical documentation for Botox and Xeomin. And exhibit 522 is a financial record for Botox treatment in 2012. Only charge Botox has such documentation present. So not only is he claiming that there's no charge, he's claiming, he's expanding it, that all of the patients that I did Botox on have no charge. This is not true because I did a reference request for the same patient, MC68, which you'll see the reference request on page 4, followed by what was sent to me from their documentation, which is void of what some of the documentation they gave you, which is an ongoing issue for me because I'm not getting complete records when I have records requests sent over. And you can see that here based on what they sent. You can tell from the top of the page, it says from each of the naturopathic doctors, that it was part of the fact that was sent to me versus what was given to you. We'll have an exhibit in the bottom right corner. And there's chart notes present. In addition, I added in his chart from the other office where I see him to show that he does have charting just at other offices as well. The very last two pages, page 16 and 17, note the date 2/13/2021. This chart note is for date of service 1/3/2020. That's what was given to the board as an exhibit. That what she sent to me on 1/27 had at least some writing. I don't even know why he would alter this document, but it was altered because he sent me a different one than what he sent you, which was a completely blank chart, and this it had something at the top. So I'm going to go ahead and go on to exhibit 3, and now we're going to fly, which I'm sure you're all happy about. I've been here a long time. Exhibit 3. A large portion of what the reporter gave to the board was in violation of patient privacy. And in order to run a PMT report, you have to click this little box that tells you you are acknowledging and agreeing to the term. Otherwise, it is punishable with disciplinary action, civil penalties, and possibly criminal action. And that is, I understand that my use of the PMT system permitted only in connection with providing medical or pharmaceutical care to a patient. He ran 34 PMT reports on patients that he had never seen and should not be accessing. And so I contacted the Arizona Pharmacy Board about this issue, and you can see at the end of this exhibit, their response. You would need a court order in order to access those documents. There are multiple examples of court cases with DEA agents and law officers accessing things like a PMP report. I went looking for a court order to be able to access this, and I did not find it on the criminal pamphlet. Exhibit 4. This is merely a breakdown of all of the prescriptions written over the course of this time. You can see what was written, the amount. There's always a maximum amount written, meaning 5 refills on every single one or almost all of them. And the math at the end under my DEA from the time, which we've already spoken about, 4/20/2012 to 12/18/2019, 9,445 controlled pills. These are samplings of emails between myself and DEA agent Eric Andrews. This has been a really, really long period of time for me because we're now at well past a year. And so it shows that I was in contact with him. It was constant. I was constantly providing information and working with their investigation at no benefit to me. I just want to reiterate, I have no ill will on anyone. It's extremely painful and sad to have lost all of the connections and people I consider to be family members and friends. And when you ask about a motive, my motive was to protect my license, and to protect my license only. And I'm always, anyone who's ever worked with me knows that I'm legal. That's my intention, is to stay legal within the confines that we're supposed to, and not to lash out at someone over something that I created. So I believe that I've walked you through these, and I'm sure that there will be questions in the future. Thank you.
All right. So we had a motion, we had a second. The motion was formal interview. I second that appeal. And did we do roll call?
Dr. Sadluck. Dr. Sadluck, did you want me to do a call? Okay.
Could you please, yeah, if you've got a motion in a second.
Dr. Sadluck?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt? Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Did we hear from Dr. Campbell? Is he still there?
Yeah, I barely heard him say aye.
That'd be a third compact disc for recording made of this hearing. I would like to get a copy if there was.
Yes, sir. That will be on the available on our website within 3 to 5 days.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're beyond that page. So let's do we have time, Gail, for case number 2174?
We can try, absolutely.
So case number 2174, Vanessa Carrera. Are you still there with us?
Yes, I'm here.
You're there, okay. Can you help us with the pronunciation of your last name?
This is actually Ann Holmgren. I'm the attorney for Dr. Carrera, and she's not present on the line, but I am present.
Okay, so you'll be speaking for her?
Yes.
Okay. And Gail, could you give us a quick overview?
Sure. This is case number 20-174, Dr. Carrera. The State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from Dr. William Powers, who's a DO and practices in the state of Michigan. Dr. Powers claims that to be the primary care for and provider for patient GB. Dr. Powers stated in his complaint, quote, "I have been trying to get this kid act together. I've been trying to help this kid get his act together for a while. He struggles with anxiety, chronic pain, and attention deficit disorder. He also has hypogonadism related to a history of prior steroid abuse. I have been gradually weaning him down on various substances in order to try to get him to be more in a more healthy state," end quote. Dr. Powers claims GB assaulted his girlfriend in mid-October of 2020, causing her to be hospitalized from the attack. Dr. Powers ran a controlled substance report on GB and discovered that he had recently received controlled substances from two Arizona physicians, one an MD, the other one was Respondent. While living in Virginia, Respondent treated patient GB via telemedicine, who at the time was living in Michigan. The intake information provided no residence information, no contact information. The labs obtained by GB a month prior to the visit were ordered by a physician in Tennessee. According to the chart note, GB reported HGH deficiency since childhood. There are no prior medical records to confirm this. According to the records, GB stated he has been on testosterone times 3 months. There are no records to confirm this. Respondent prescribed anabolic androgen steroids, which were not for legitimate medical purpose, to a patient who, according to Dr. Powers, has prior steroid abuse. According to the medical chart, GB reported prior opioid addiction. Respondent charted on July 1 of 2020, quote unquote, "He is interested in gaining size." On 9/11/2019, quote unquote, "The patient is aware that this is an elective therapy and there may or may not be any medical need for the treatment." The only labs included in the patient records were dated 1 month prior to the patient's initial encounter, which show testosterone levels within normal limits. There are no records indicating a legitimate diagnosis. The intake information is not existent. There is no indication in the record respondent at any time checked the CSPMP for prior prescriptions. Although respondent referenced labs in the chart and several encounter dates, there are no reports included in the chart to confirm labs were completed while GB was under the care of respondent.
After looking at this case, complaining about the phone line. So you give us your time and viewpoint on what her, just so that I'm clear and the board's clear, what her prescribing logic was. There's Clomid, there's testosterone, and utilizes CNIs in the medical area. And I'm trying to really discern is where was she with all this various prescribing without doing testing, without doing blood tests, hormonally, et cetera.
Thank you. Yeah, I will address this to the best of my abilities, and if you I'd be happy to set up an interview with Dr. Ferreira or some other supplemental response. But based on my understanding from talking with my client and then also reviewing the medical records, is that Dr. Ferreira was aware of the fact that this patient had a prior opioid addiction that he had overcome. She took him at face value that he had a DHD deficiency as a child. And I think as we explained in the supplemental response, that he had been using testosterone from in the past, and that he wanted to have his testosterone medically managed in order to help alleviate the symptoms that he was having as a result of his HGH deficiency. So I think in Dr. Ferreira's mind, she was attempting to treat this patient without prescribing any sort of opioid or controlled substance, and using the various different treatment modalities that were best for the way in which this patient presented, given the problems that he had in the past and what he was looking to accomplish in the future.
Okay. Virginia, and then doing telemedicine, and then there's Michigan, then there's Tennessee. This is kind of all over the place. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry she's too busy to be fucking with us on the phone. But this is, in my case, some serious prescribing issues that I don't have any logic to why she and doing what she's doing.
Well, so to give you more of a context on the background, the company that she was working with, this Titanium 88, was a concierge service based out of Phoenix, and she was in Arizona when she was hired on by this company. And then she relocated to Virginia because of different issues. I think her husband was placed in a residency there. And so it was her understanding with the manager of this company that she would only be conducting these telemedicine business with Arizona residents. And so that's something that she certainly admits to in her response, that she did not take enough steps to verify that this was actually the case. In terms of the Tennessee issue on the lab work, what Dr. Burns described to me was that the lab, when a patient's self-orders, blood work, or whatever, depending on where the lab is, that lab work is registered as wherever the lab is. And they list the medical director as the ordering physician on the lab when it's self-ordered lab work. So I don't believe that the patient was actually in Tennessee. You were a resident of Tennessee. He just happened to elect to use a service that was based out of Tennessee because he was self-ordering his lab work.
Both of those issues are absolutely the least of my concern. As Dr. Sadalek mentioned, the prescribing habits, as well as not running apps for 2 years, is absolutely unconscionable. So again, as Dr. Sadalek said, I'm surprised Dr. Ferreira didn't find the time to have a discussion today because these are serious issues. The idea that she would, I couldn't care less if she's doing the telemedicine. That's a, yes, there are some legalities you have to follow. but continue to prescribe these substances and the prescription of oxandrolone is absolutely unexplainable and unsupportable in any sort of medical justification regardless of why the patient needs testosterone. You're taking over his care and you need to do follow-up labs. So as far as I'm concerned, there is no justification for any ongoing prescription past 3 to 4 months after he began care with her. So any prescription written after that without labs is essentially unsupportable, undocumented, you know, and she has not an ounce of ground to stand on as far as why she continues to write these prescriptions. So it doesn't matter to me that there's a concierge service. It doesn't matter to me those other issues. What she's doing with these prescriptions and not doing follow-up labs has no medical justification or support. I do hormone replacement all the time. There would never be a time when I would continue writing prescriptions, particularly oxandrolone, and not get a basic liver enzyme test, cholesterol levels, follow-up testosterone levels. So as far as I'm concerned, this is kind of a waste of time until we hear from Dr. Ferreira. I apologize, counsel, no disrespect, but it's a waste of our time that she's not on the call today.
Dr. Field, do you want to actually hear from her, or due to the fact that she's so busy, you just want to make a ruling?
That's fine. I guess she doesn't have the importance to come in front of the board and support herself, so I have no reason to waste continuous board time and wait for her to respond in a month. So I'm fine with we can proceed forward. That's fine.
Let me run by the other physician. So Dr. Rubin, give me your feedback on this.
My feedback mirrors. This is Dr. Dan Rubin. My feedback mirrors Dr. Appeals. He said it eloquently, and I am so concerned that this physician, that this board license, doesn't recognize, number one, the value of this board, the time that we put in, and the seriousness of this accusation and how it's risen. I have great dismay, and I have great concern over her judgment as a physician, that she wouldn't be here today to discuss this. I appreciate that she wrote us a note and saying she takes full responsibility, but to send counsel in her stead to talk to us when we can't question the respondent, there's nothing medical we can ask counsel, and that she doesn't recognize the potential severity of this gives me great pause in whom we license and her judgment as a physician. And because of that, I would like to move forward as well. And I'd like to know our options. I'm sorry, hang on, I'm not done.
Go ahead, Dr. Rubin.
Because of that, and I'm assuming that counsel is going to make an excuse for why respondent can't be here, and happy to hear it, but that's all I have to say.
Dr. Spatz. What's your thought?
I think everything has been this is for Spad. I think everyone has said what my feeling is as well. So let's move forward with it.
Ms. Tippett.
I agree. I think we have enough information and based on Dr. Popio's comments, I think we have enough to move forward without her.
Ms. Gallen.
I agree.
Campbell. I think we may have lost Dr. Campbell.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, good. Thank you. I concur with my colleagues on the board in the absence of an overriding emergency, something that, you know, happened at the last second. I can't imagine a valid excuse. I concur with the board to move forward.
Yeah, my concern is I can't make, and I think you also saw it too, Dr. Phil, I can't make heads or tails on the prescribing logic. And these aren't aspirins, these are obviously medications. They're
It's not that Dr. Ferrer couldn't be here. She took the day off of work. She was just too nervous to attend. She wanted me to attend. I can get her on the line right now, and you can ask her any questions that you have. I promise you she takes this seriously and was not trying to skirt any authority of the board or disrespect you in any way.
This is Dr. Bofill. I appreciate that you can get her on the line, but her letter actually was fairly clear in her perspective. She does not understand why this is a problem, and so, I don't have any need to waste any more time trying to get her on the line and have her explain herself at this point. Up to you guys, though.
This is Dr. Dan Rubin. I don't want to waste any more time. We've been here a long time. We've got other things we need to do. I'm happy for somebody to make a motion. I'm sorry, Dr. Sadler, it's probably your job, but I said it.
Well, I say we make a motion to do a consent agreement. Probably we're going to have to work it off of more than a letter of concern. It's going to be a letter of reprimand and allow board staff to do a consent agreement.
Dr. Sadler, and members of the board, if you're going to make such a motion, the letter of reprimand should have findings of facts and conclusions of law. An order. So,
right. Do you want us to specify for you now? Well, first of all, let me see if there's interest in that. So let's go through the board. So, Dr. Popiel, your thoughts on where we need to go?
Yeah, I think our consent agreement with a letter of reprimand, my thoughts would be, honestly, I would probably say taking away the inability to prescribe any controlled substances whatsoever, at least for the next year, continuing education and hormone replacement. She mentioned numerous times that she has ongoing education in hormone replacement, yet no legitimate hormone replacement doctor would practice like this. So to me, it would be inability to prescribe controlled substances for the next year and probably 15 hours of CEUs in hormone replacement therapy.
Dr. Rubin, do you have anything to add to it?
This is Dr. Rubin. I just wanted to comment that that is an excellent suggestion, and I would concur.
I only talked to Alexandra Lincoln, whatever, financial. I didn't back them anywhere else.
I'm sorry.
Dr. Spack.
Are you calling on me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I concur with Dr. Popiel and also Dr. Rubin as well.
Okay. Dr. Campbell, we're working on getting this finished up. Do you have anything you want to add to the letter of, we're basically doing a consent agreement?
No, just that the training is pre-approved by the board. If she's indicated taking a number of that should be lacking efficiency in patient care and standards of medical practice, then perhaps we need to be overseeing that.
Ms. Gallen?
She, of course, is.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add right now.
So is the motion that the probation would mean a practice restriction on all controlled substances? Is that what I heard? Or were there other aspects to that?
I think that was part of Dr. Popiel's motion.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if we opened up Pandora's box as to what other prescribing habits she has, it could be concerning. I don't really have the need to dig into that, but given that she's prescribed oxandrolone twice without lab, just made estrogen blocker choices based on the patient's recommendations, again without lab, you know, I don't really feel like she has the ability to monitor her own prescriptions at this point. So, you know, hormone replacement and also I guess maybe controlled substances, but I think we just say hormone replacement therapy at this point as far as the restrictions. But essentially, I would say a restriction of all controlled substances.
Dr. Phil, are you okay in the hormonal, which is T3, or you also want all T2s and T3s?
I guess my thought is for testosterone, you know, and certainly oxandrolone, any of those others that put nandrolone, any of the other ones that fall within that category. So I guess my thoughts are mainly I forget which ones fall on which category, but I feel like all the anabolics need to be taken off of her prescription capacity.
Prescribing. I mean, I defer to the doctors on the board for that.
I mean, you bring up an excellent point.
Is that it appears that the prescribing practices for these hormone replacements are so obviously not in alignment with good practice, and so I guess I would be concerned about other prescribing practices. They're so blatant, even for someone who's non-physician.
I did run a PMP on her, it looks like for a year, and the majority of it are the oxandrolone, the testosterone, phentermine, the typical three that you would see.
Members, it's up to you whether you want to just do the anabolic or whether you want to do the other T3s, benzo. It doesn't appear to be benzodiazepines are an issue.
I would imagine labs aren't being done if somebody's on the bench, I mean, either, potentially.
How far did you get with the drawer?
I would put that on it.
Okay.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
Holly, is that you?
That was not I. I am muted.
Oh. Yeah, it was.
It sounded like you, Holly. Okay, so.
I didn't mean to pick on you, Holly.
That's okay. It happens every time I appear.
All right, so the anabolic we discussed as being part of this. Dr. Field, did you want phentermine or any of the T3s on there?
Yeah, I think phentermine should be on there.
Okay. And
Yeah, I have Ventermine.
Okay. And did you make notes for the consent agreement?
I did.
Okay. So we have it out there. I think that's the first time crafting it.
Dr. Like amendment members of the board, there have to be findings of fact and conclusions of law. So you will have to determine what facts you think are salient, whether you want to defer to the investigative report and have that be incorporated as a finding of fact. That's fine. You'll have to determine today what the violations of law are.
So, in my opinion, I'll run it up to the other position members, but findings of fact.
I think there's a notion of unprofessional conduct as well in terms of, you know, prescribing a drug not for its accepted therapeutic purpose, which seems, you know, reckless, especially without assessing a diagnosis code that has any legitimacy.
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is Gail. If you'd reference the investigative report, I do outline the potential statutes.
Would you be able to put those into the consent agreement, Gail? Or do you want one of the board members to state?
I think it would be clearer if the board members would state they can reference what's on the investigative report under the definitions and potential statute violations.
So you're referring to ARS 32-15-0131, and
correct.
Then you're looking at section R, D, W, mean UU, and help me out, guys, if I'm missing anything. B as in boy, E as in Paul, F as in Sam. That's what I have so far.
And what about Z?
Z as in dog.
Z as in zebra?
Z as in zebra, yes.
Okay.
To her to look to the investigative report for findings of fact, as well as what you said?
Yes, please. So we have the motion, correct? We're good with that. So we need, I think we had second. I'm just going back in my notes. Do we need roll call?
I think.
So if we could, if we could go over this one more time, who made the original motion? Was it Dr. Propio?
It was.
And then who seconded, please? Was there any further discussion?
I think we did have some further discussion. I think do any board members have any other way they want to do that? No. Well, I guess we could put this out for roll call, Gail.
Okay. And Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
And motion carries.
This is Dr. Rubin needs to recuse, and this is me. And that was formally written as I had recused from prayer.
From this case, okay. Thank you. And Yale, can you give us a quick rundown?
I can. On 10-8 of 2020, Dr. Bailey entered into a consent agreement with the board regarding case number 2152. Among other things, the consent agreement requires Dr. Bailey to present before the board approximately 6 months after the execution of the agreement, so the board may obtain the status report on her treatment progress and compliance with the terms of probation. She has maintained general compliance with the order. I would like to note that it looks like we're missing one potential urine test, but all of the tests have been negative thus far. And the counselors, the consent agreement requires prior reports to include the counselor's monthly progress reports, which have not been included in the psychiatrist's reports to the board. So that is one area where it has not, the consent agreement has not been adhered to.
Okay. Dr. Bailey or
certainly, I believe Dr. Bailey is on the phone. Let me say at the beginning, first of all, thank you for hearing our case this afternoon. It was my understanding that the counselors as well as the psychiatrist, they are in the same office, have provided all of the required reports. So Dr. Bailey may be able to address that. I also wanted to say that just after the board and Dr. Bailey entered into their consent agreement, which had been in operation in Sedona, did go out of business this time. And so Dr. Bailey was able to, working with Ms. Anthony, arrange for a different random screening authority to be even before I did. I had heard it was potentially going out, but she determined, found out that it was out of business, and on her own initiative started finding alternatives there and was very diligent in doing that. So now I think Dr. Bailey can address the issue of the therapist counselor's immediately.
And this, yeah, this is Dr. Bailey speaking. I had sent an email to, I had personally sent a consent agreement to both the psychiatrist and the counselor. However, they seemed to have a little bit of confusion regarding which visits they were supposed to send the letters afterwards, like after each visit or after just the third and then the sixth. So I formulated an email to them, which I can send to Dale. I can forward it to her, confirming down exactly which visits they needed and what information needed to be included to the board. I just met with my counselor on Tuesday evening via telemedicine, and she told me that she had been sending them in the entire time based on the email that I had sent kind of outlining it for her. So I'm not sure why those were sent in. As far as I know, they
did. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, if I may, I have been getting the reports, so to speak, but the consent agreement calls for progress notes for the counselor, and those progress notes were not included. That's what I was referring to.
Okay, I did put that in the email that it needed to be progress notes. I outlined exactly what she needed to do. So I don't have access to those progress notes personally, but I can ask that she send them as soon as possible.
And I think what I can do, you know, every discipline has its own standards for record keeping. I have seen lots of counselor records that do not include progress notes. I've never seen progress notes in therapist records, which generally are almost impossible to get anyway. But what I will do to make sure is I will send the counselor an email. I will copy Ms. Anthony, and I will explain to the counselor that even if her normal practice is not to keep progress notes, she needs to document her assessment of progress. And in effect, she needs to start doing that and find out if anyone is concerned. If for some reason she just won't do that, I doubt that will be the case, then I'll come back and relate that to Dr. Anthony. To Ms. Anthony, I think that this is a case of a counselor who probably doesn't receive the case. His progress notes, he does keep progress notes, and he's not realizing that that's what the board wants. So I will email her and explain that she needs to do that for her patient's benefit with the licensing board.
And Gail, would you like me to forward the email that I had sent that broke down everything, including me putting in there that they needed written progress notes?
If you wouldn't mind, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, I'll send it right now.
Thank you.
On another positive note, of course, it's not a fait accompli, as I said, but the Coconino County prosecutor has not yet charged Dr. Bailey with anything. My hope, and this is really, this case is a good one to maybe end the day on because it's very positive. It shows how boards and licensees can work together. And my hope is that by Dr. Bailey demonstrating compliance and being supervised by her board and in a very thorough way, that the prosecutor may say this is the best defense in this case and there's no need for any criminal action. Some boards are doing that. And I hear that is something that can be accomplished. That's a real So I'm hopeful that will be the case. Can't promise it, but there's no charge yet, and it's been almost, you know, it's been quite a while. So maybe that will be the case.
Okay. Thank you, board members. Do we have anything else on 7, or can we move on real quickly? to let 8 go. We jumped to 10. Gail, is that okay with you?
Yes, that's fine.
This is Dr. Dan Rubin. I have to recuse from B, C, and D.
From B, C, and D?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Number 10?
Yeah.
Okay. So we still have quorum. So 10 is renewal consideration of possible action regarding renewal of certificates to defend. As 10A, obviously Dr. Fields is going to recuse. I'll make the motion that we renew his certificate to defend.
I second that. This is the spot.
All those in favor? Gail?
Aye.
Any recused? Any nays? I'm sorry. Motion carries.
Ruben, but 10B is a boy. Obviously, you're recused, Dr. Ruben. I'll make a motion that we renew his certificate to defense.
I second it, Karen.
Go ahead.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Dr. Melissa Coates. Dr. Rubin's recused.
Sorry for the interruption, members of the board. Dr. Sally, did you want to ask Dr. Rubin about why he's recusing on C and D?
Sure. Dr. Rubin, why are you recused? I know why on D, but why are you recusing on C?
We employ that physician.
Okay. And we know that D is your better half, so on 10C, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and approve the renewal certificate to defense for Dr. Cohen.
This is Dr. McFeely. Second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
10D is a dog. Dr. Smolinski, I'll make a motion to renew certificate to dispense.
Does Dr. Popiola second that motion?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Well, I mean, we have like a minute, according to my clock. So if you'd like, I can put 9, 8, 9, and 11 on June's agenda.
Okay, let's do that, and then let me, if everyone's okay with, I need to probably wrap up with the call to the public.
If anyone here wishes to address the board, only once, twice, the last time, is the one out there. Okay. It is 4:59, and if anyone has anything to say, we'll wrap this meeting.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.